This episode of Travel Today with Peter Greenberg is brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio information and entertainment. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Sign up today at www.audiblepodcast.com/travel today to get a free audiobook and 30-day trial.
It's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one travel news journalist. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, your travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
Hi, everybody. Peter Greenberg here, and welcome to the podcast that's done from a different location around the world every single week. One day Canada, the next day Thailand, then New York, London. You just never know. This week we come to you from Anaheim, California. In fact, at the Anaheim Marriott, I have to admit that I've been coming to Anaheim since 1971 when I was a correspondent for Newsweek, when it was a real magazine, and covering everything west of the Mississippi. That was my first, first exposure to Disneyland and a few other places. Back then, all you knew about Anaheim was Disneyland and Knott's Berry Farm, and that was about it. And of course, it has exploded since then, and it's so much more than that. We'll talk about that throughout the show. But one of the things I wanted to talk about off the top is we live in a world where every chef is a celebrity chef. We live in a world where if you're a chef, you have to have your own TV show, and you have to get on Chopped or Top Chef or whatever. Well, my first guest on this show is a celebrity chef for another reason, and that reason is a restaurant. It's a historic landmark that was here for so many years called the Anaheim White House. But what he did, forget the menu for a second. Forget the food. Think about the mission. His name, Bruno Serrato. Bruno, welcome to the show.
Grazie, Peter. Buongiorno. Buongiorno, everybody.
Oh,
I'm so happy to be with you today.
I know this is radio, but to see a chef dressed in black and gray is pretty cool.
I know. I have a good-looking chef jacket, which I like to wear all the time.
But I said mission. And what you've done over the, how many years were you doing this?
This is my 13 years. April 18 will be 13 years, yeah.
Doing what?
Serving children in need and serve them pasta every single night, 5 nights of the week. I started in 2005 with a first kit, and now we're serving 3,500 children every single night, 5 nights of the week.
Every single night. You know, this is probably one of the best examples of the situation that we have in this country of food insecurity,
yes,
of children going hungry every night. What awoke you? What was your wake-up call?
My wake-up call, it was that day, you know, April 18, 2005. I went to a boys-girls club with my mom, who she visited me from Italy. And there was a little kid, 7 years old, eating potato chips. And the director said, "Do you know, Bruno, that is probably his own dinner?" And I said, "Why?" He said, "We have a lot of motel in the country, not only Anaheim, all over the world, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of families live in a motel because they can't afford or they can't move to an apartment to pay first and last month rent." And with mom, I said, "You know," I said, "the kid is in a bad situation. Potato chips is his dinner." What an Italian mom will tell me, "Bruno, why don't you feed him pasta?" A start. But with the year coming up, look at more of the situation, I knew that would be my mission. And it's very interesting things that you start about celebrity chef. A year ago, a little kid asking me a question. He said, "Chef Bruno, are you a celebrity chef?" And he was probably 9, 10 years old. I said, "Well," I said, "there's two kind of celebrity chef, like you mentioned, the one on TV, the one as a TV show. I'm a celebrity chef for different reasons." And I tell him, he looked at me, he's like, "Well, I like you better." But I thought it was an innocent question from a young little kid. And it's like, yeah, because I don't want to be a... In fact, tonight, I was waiting for the event to come up with you. A lady say, "Would you like to remember? How'd you like to be remembered?" I say, "I had the chef who was feeding pasta to the kids. That is the only things I want to be remembered when I be going to heaven."
And yet, a fire happened back in February of 2017.
That was almost a year ago. Yeah.
Yeah. That burned your restaurant to the ground.
Yeah. And that also another blessing because I got a phone call at 5 a.m. You know, you think it's a prick joke when people tell you your restaurant is on fire. And I put my pants on, drive my car 100 miles an hour, get to Anaheim and look at all the firemen and the police. I was devastated. I cried 10 minutes nonstop. But an hour later, watching the fire, the restaurant burning, 80% of what I work, I give my love for 30 years, cry my heart out, I got a phone call from a director of Boys Girls Club too. He said, Bruno, do you need a kitchen? I was so concerned how I'm going to feed the kids tomorrow. And they say, I have a kitchen for you. That moment, my heart smiled. My heart started to beat again because they stopped from the moment I look at the fire and flame and smoke. But when he told me I have a kitchen, and that was like probably an hour and a half, 2 max from after the fire, I have a kitchen. I'm set. And my second thing was the crew. 2 hours later, I was preoccupied with 60 of my employees. But Anaheim Marriott, the general manager, called me. Disneyland president called me. Hilton called me. A lot of people come and say, Bruno, what can we do? Say, hire my crew, please. They have a family to feed. To feed, you know, like.
Yeah.
And they all were behind my back. And they hire, all my crew was hired in 30 days' time.
And now the restaurant's being rebuilt.
I'm opening up in 3-4 weeks from now. And can you see my smile? No, I was excited because...
And you've maintained feeding of the kids from that moment on.
We never miss one day. And by the fact, when the fire happened, I was serving 1,800 kids. A year later, we are close to 4,000, 3,500.
So ironically, the fire got you publicity you didn't even know about.
I had people call me from Australia, Hong Kong, Italy, obviously, because my country, Czech Republic. I was surprised. I mean, I was like, well, maybe I am a celebrity. I don't even know. Honestly, I thought it was funny because I didn't know that people would just talk so much about me. But in my heart, the celebrity are the kids. That's I represent the kid. I represent my mom from heaven because she's the one who told me. But everything I do is my
passion.
Menu
still pasta?
It's for the kids, yeah. But I do... 2 times a week, bolognese sauce. 2 times a week with chicken, because you need to get the protein and the fiber. I mean, I just take care also the health things of the kid. But pasta every day, because kids love 2 things, pasta or pizza. Forget the rest. And you know what I do with the vegetable? I'll tell you a secret. One time I served a bunch of broccoli in a pasta, and the kid didn't need it. And the director said, well, Bruno, they don't like to see the green stuff inside. Well, I found the trick. Now I blend the vegetable and the tomato sauce, that means that they can't see the green.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Down in Southern California. I always like to have our next guest on. He's a great Orange County historian. Chris Epting, how are you, sir?
I'm good, Peter. Good to see you again.
And good to see you again. I mean, where we are, I mean, I remember when I first came down here in 1971, this building, of course, was not here, not really. None of these buildings were. I mean, Disneyland was maybe 1/5 the size of what it is today. Mm-hmm. But what else has changed about this location?
This very location?
Yeah.
Well, everything. I mean, the county, as you say, has exploded since the 70s. I mean, there was a beautiful building called the Orange County Convention Center. There's kind of a googie architecture right behind us, where if you came in 71, you could have seen Elton John opening for Leon Russell there. That was sort of the rock and roll.
How about that? Elton John opening
for
Leon Russell
in 71. Orange County has grown in a lot of ways. You're talking about Disneyland, and that certainly is in 1955 when it opened. That's what made it an international tourist destination. But Orange County always had a lot of these kind of quirky little places to visit. Knott's Berry Farm was here before Disneyland. You had the Japanese Deer Park. You had the Lion Country Safari. You had this whole myriad, the Buffalo Ranch, the Alligator Farm. Orange County was full of these.
Is the Alligator Farm still here?
It's not, but you know what? It was right down the street from Knott's Berry Farm. It was going out of business in the late 50s. Knott's Berry Farm, what they decided to do to help them out, they have a famous fried chicken restaurant there. They would take all the chicken.
So alligators taste just like chicken.
they would take the excess chicken at the end of the night, and for 5 years they kept the Alligator Farm open, feeding them the excess chicken.
So, then what happened?
Well, then it just got too out of control. They had too many alligators.
The alligators got too big.
Said, you know what, we can only do this for so long. But yeah, Orange County has always had this kind of interesting, quirky appeal, I think, because of we had so much space down here and so much room to do these things that people would come from Los Angeles to visit strange amusement parks and things like that.
But more than just the amusement parks, you mentioned the space. I mean, look at the Irvine the company. I mean, look at the space they had to play with.
Orange County still has, I like to hike a lot, and Orange County still has a remarkable amount of open space. I hike almost every weekend, and I can get lost. You can get lost and forget where you are. There are no cars, no phone poles. We've got great mountainous regions that are wonderful for things like that.
But now back to Anaheim. Mm-hmm. Where we are right now has history.
Well, where we are right now, it's a nice hotel, but right around us, okay, Angel Stadium is not too far away. And, you know, I'm a big baseball fan. I know you are as well. People don't realize because the Angels have been here since 1966, okay? Angel Stadium is not...
Now, the Dodgers came out in 58?
58. First season was 58.
Yeah.
But Angel Stadium is now the fourth oldest ballpark in the major leagues, believe it or not. It's Fenway, Wrigley, Dodger, and Angel.
You're kidding me.
No. But people don't realize, though, before the Angels, there was still baseball history here. Where you're sitting right now, Babe Ruth played a game in 1924 against a team led by Walter Johnson 10 minutes from here, okay? Jackie Robinson, 5 minutes from here, filmed the Jackie Robinson story in 1953. Joe DiMaggio played 5 minutes the other direction. Again, Orange County, I wrote a whole book about Orange County baseball history.
Yeah, we talked about it.
And it is, you know, what's happened here is very notable.
Amazing. Of course, not too far from here, Huntington Beach, where the last time I saw you, Surf City.
I mean, you know, Dean Torrance was over there from Jan and Dean.
He was on the show.
He was. That's right. I mean, Orange County gave us the Righteous Brothers. But one of, I think, my favorite landmark, and it's tied to baseball. Again, everything's 5 minutes from where we're very central right now where we are. But is a final resting place of the man who wrote the third most popular song in American history. Any guesses what that might be?
Well, first of all, it can't be Happy Birthday.
It's number two.
Happy Birthday's number two?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that would be number one.
Number one is the national anthem. And number three is Take Me Out to the Ball Game.
Okay, there we go.
And the guy who wrote Take Me Out to the Ball Game is laid to rest practically in the shadow.
With peanuts and Cracker Jacks, I hope.
Well, check this out. His name is Jack Norworth, okay? He writes it in 1908 in New York City. Becomes a big hit. He's the guy that wrote Shine on Harvest Moon. That was what made him the toast of Broadway. Take Me Out to the Ball Game becomes a huge hit, but what we sing at games is only the chorus of the song. He wrote a little three-act play about a guy who wants to take a girl to a Broadway show. She doesn't want to go to a show. She's a baseball fan. And when we sing Take Me Out to the Ball Game, that's her saying to him, I don't want to go to a show. If you want to win my heart, you'll take me out to the ball game.
They should come back and they should revive that.
Well, check it out. He moves here in the early 30s, passes away in the late 50s, and is laid to rest there. I went to photograph his grave for my book, and when I noticed his grave was really kind of forgotten, I gave a talk about it, and a bunch of fans started raising money, and we actually placed a marker in his honor there. Raleigh Fingers and I had the had a
Raleigh
big ceremony
Fingers,
there.
Big pitcher.
And we had a ceremony there. I figured because he had the old-time mustache. He was the perfect guy to do it.
He did.
And so now if you go to the graveyard, there's a beautiful marker in his honor. And you can see Angel Stadium from the markers. So it's an interesting thing. And again, I have this running sort of concept. People don't give Orange County its due in terms of historic things that have happened here. You're a big music fan, right?
I am.
Okay, so another literally five minutes from here, in the mid-50s, there was an African-American singer named Richard Berry up in L.A. He comes down here to go to an old place called the Harmony Hut Ballroom. There's a band there playing that he likes called the Rhythm Rockers. Well, they put their minds together the night. They write a song, okay? What rock and roll classic was born backstage at the Harmony Hut Ballroom in 55? Louie Louie.
By the way, which has been debated for years as to what the actual lyrics were.
And is it profane? Right, there's a lot of mystique.
Let me just help you out. Every night at 10, again. That's what I
like say.
Yeah, right.
But that was born. That's another Orange County story. So again,
and by the way, but you haven't answered the question. Was it profane?
I think it was.
I do too.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
And it helped certainly the mystique of that
song.
Oh,
it got me through high school. What are you talking about? Every kid in my class was going, did you hear that song? Did you hear that? Because we were like giggling.
Yeah, well, it was. But again, the thought that it was born here, it's. I love the fact that the county has these sort of great pop culture legacies. And it's fun to sort of reveal those and tell people who grew up here even, which I didn't. I grew up in New York. But to educate people who live here is always kind of fun too.
Are the Angels going to do okay this year?
You know, they signed one of the most talked about prospects in a long time from Japan, Mr. Ohtani there, and I think they're going to be great. I'm a big Angels fan. You know, it's been a while since that 2002 World Series championship, so we are due, and
well,
I think they'll be being good hands?
My recollection of the Angels was the guy who dropped the ball in center field.
Which guy?
Well, he ended up killing himself.
Oh, Donnie Moore. Well, no, the pitcher who gave up the home run. You're talking about 86
in
the playoffs. He gave up the home run to Dave Henderson.
Right.
And that was tragic. I mean, as a Met fan that year, that's the year I was at the game with Bill Buckner at Shea Stadium.
Okay,
famous
let's
game
discuss
six.
That, because I actually have an autographed picture of that play, of the mm-hmm. ball going under his legs, mm-hmm. signed by both Bill Buckner and Mookie Wilson.
Good for you.
And now, for those people who watch the show, Curb Your Enthusiasm, you must Google this
Brilliant.
And Netflix it and find it with Larry David. He does a show in which his guests that week are Mookie Wilson and
so
Bill
funny.
Buckner.
It is so funny.
And I won't give away the end, but I'm still laughing.
Hey, little bit of baseball trivia. I was at that game, and one thing I noticed is
game six, by the way.
Even if Buckner made the play, the pitcher, Bob Stanley, didn't run over to cover first. So there would have been no play on Wilson. The game would have been tied. It wouldn't have been over.
Either way.
But it wasn't Buckner's fault. Buckner
well, the game was tied on that play. Then it was over.
Well, two runs scored
on
the error.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm saying if Buckner had made the play and nobody was there to cover, then only one run would have scored. So Buckner got such a raw deal on that.
There were death threats.
Terrible.
And little known fact of baseball history, which has nothing to do with Anaheim, but I'm throwing it in anyway. The next year for preseason, the first game the Mets play, because it was scheduled that way, the Red Sox.
Yeah.
And they played it at Shea Stadium. And when Buckner got up to bat, he got a standing O.
Yeah. I would tell people, the baseball fans, if you've never been to Angel Stadium, it is one of the most delightful experiences in Major League Baseball.
It's a pleasant evening.
It is a wonderful evening. It's easy to get in. It's easy to get out. The sight lines are fantastic. I don't think there's a bad seat in the place. And I have friends that will come from New York and say, do you know how spoiled you are that you can drive? I live in Huntington Beach. 15 minutes door to door and be in my seat for a decent price. It's a wonderful night.
And
out.
Little known fact for people who haven't come to California in a long time, who's the coach? He's a former Dodger.
Mike Socia, who's now the longest running coach in the majors, like something like 21 years.
That never happens.
No, it's a great product. And, you know, we have Mike Trout, who's certainly a talked about guy worth watching. So I think it'll be a good season this year.
For people who've either never been to Anaheim or are visiting you for the first time, and you bring them here, what's the one, other than the marker to the guy who wrote Take Me Out to the Ball Game, what's the one thing you show them that they're not expecting that's a big surprise?
I go over to Santa Ana, right near Anaheim, and I show them an old YMCA building. And I say, in that basement there back in the early 20s, an idea was born. That was where Toastmasters International was birthed by a guy who didn't like the fact that the young men in the group couldn't be good public speakers. And he took it upon himself, Ralph Smedley. And I love public speaking, and I love good public speakers. And that, to me, again, is another little-known thing, little spark of imagination that grew out of a basement window in an old YMCA building.
Isn't it interesting? The guy who started Toastmaster General had a name Smedley. There's a name on a page at the airport. Mr. Smedley! Mr. Lady! No, okay.
But I also take him to Huntington Beach Pier. Is also, to me, one of the great... It's the longest
and
fishing
all,
pier.
And all doable from Anaheim.
Oh, 15 minutes from Anaheim. Yeah. Anaheim is wonderfully centrally located.
If you are continuing on to another Southwest destination, please make sure that you check the monitors inside the terminal for your proper gate and flight information. If you are continuing on with another airline, we really don't care.
I
am a passenger.
I can't come to Anaheim without talking about Disneyland. And my next two guests, that's right, two. I get two for the price of one here. Know a lot about it because they're the co-founders. First of all, they're moms. They got kids, they're sisters, and they're the co-founders of Magic Kingdom Mamas. Now, if necessity is the mother of invention, Julie Mooney and Emily Sims, I'm assuming that's why you started this.
Yes, actually. It is. At first, it started as a way for us to, we both lived kind of equidistant to Disneyland, and we found a way to meet in the middle because we both had kids that are cousins, and we wanted them to hang out every week.
Are you Disney addicts?
Oh, yeah.
Come on, admit it.
We are.
Is there a 10-step program or something?
I think at this point we need it.
Yeah, if there is, we haven't made it there yet.
Yeah, yeah.
But we just met in the middle every week, and it turned into, a thing as we started going. Family and friends kept asking us just questions. What's
because there's so many guidebooks. I mean, there's so many guidebooks. There's a Disney behind the scenes. There's the unofficial Disneyland guidebook.
Yes.
Where do you fit in?
We cater mostly to, you know, Disney has a huge group of parents of young kids who go. And so we've kind of found this niche of, you know, parents with little kids, probably ages 8 and under, who I think the guidebooks didn't cater to as much, because guidebooks and things of that nature cater to like the big thrill rides and stuff. But what about the people with the little ones, the toddlers running around? What do you do with them all day? Where do they nap?
And you guys came here when you were little because your parents took you.
Yes. Yeah. And they survived.
Yeah, we came about once a year. That was our big trip every year. But now we go anywhere from 1 to 3 times a week with
okay,
our kids.
Let me just say you're out of control.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. Just a little.
Just a little. But we love it. It never gets old to us.
Okay, so the questions that people are asking you, obviously parents, right, who are bringing their young kids.
Yeah.
What's the most asked question? How do could I make a suggestion?
Sure.
Would it be like, how do I avoid the lines?
Yeah.
Would that be one?
Sure.
Yeah.
And what do you tell them?
Well,
because they have fast passes and they have.
They do. But if you're going to go to Disneyland, our number one recommendation for getting the most out of your day is arrive early. Because in the morning when the park opens, the lines are the shortest. A lot of the rides for kids don't offer fast pass. So you can get so many things done in that first hour when the park opens, and kids wake up early.
Yeah, okay. I mean, but to be devil's advocate, I give that same advice for people who are flying out of airports.
So to clarify, when Emily's an early bird, she always has been. When she says arrive early, she means arrive obnoxiously early. Like, it is dark outside, you are the first person in the parking lot. Like,
so basically you're homeless and camping out.
Yeah. But there, I do it 1 to 3 times a week, and I always have success with getting on what we want to get on in the morning as far as rides go.
Okay, now you've opened that door. What do you want to get on in the morning?
Well, you got to go to Fantasyland first and do all the kiddo rides. Peter Pan, Snow White, Dumbo. Those rides actually have some of the longest, you know, wait times out of the
park. For me, it's Pirates of the Caribbean. I'm old school.
Yeah. Which is great, but in the morning, that has a short line. But Peter Pan, you will see parents with children in hand sprinting to that ride in the morning because it's, you know, notoriously a 30 to 40 minute line for less than 1 minute, the entire ride.
Yeah.
And
it's
so
nostalgic.
It's for the nostalgia. Parents remember it from when they were kids. They want to share it with their kids. So it's this really short ride, lots of magic packed into a short ride, but you want to get that one out of the way first. Yeah. So.
Okay, so now I have to ask the devil's advocate question.
Sure.
What ride sucks?
Roger Rabbit's cartoon.
Roger
spin.
Rabbit will guaranteed to make your child cry. Yeah. At least our kids. Yeah. Our kids come off that crying every time. We go, why did we do this? Because it's just.
What, you keep doing it?
We haven't in a while. It's dark and it's loud and it spins really fast. So
it's
especially with.
Just kind of painful, to be honest. It just hurts when you're on it. It's not comfortable. So.
So that's not one of your highly recommended rides. Is there another one that you go avoid?
What's another one we avoid?
Finding Nemo.
Oh, yeah.
Is for small children, they love it. It's super magical. If you have any issues with claustrophobia, do not get on that ride. No. It is a submarine. It's mostly, from what you can see, it is submerged underwater. And for me, I'm very claustrophobic. So I just, when they close that hatch, it is like you are just praying the whole time and counting down, like, while your kid is delighted and so happy. But for me, it's for people with claustrophobia issues, don't do it.
Okay, excuse me for asking stupid question number 4. You know they're going to close the hatch.
Yeah.
You know you think you're going to be underwater. How many times have you taken this ride?
I actually, since I've had kids, I've only done it twice, and two times is, and I have a 6-year-old, and 2 times is enough for me. My husband is gracious enough to take one for the team and he'll do it. But for me, it's not worth it, you know? So, and we've heard that from a lot of people. Those two rides, also Roger Rabbit and Finding Nemo, have a long line typically. So there's people who wait this long time and they get on the ride and you're like, oh, that wasn't worth it at all. So anyway.
Okay. So now let's turn the tables here.
Yeah.
What's the one ride there that surprised you in the most pleasant and uplifting way that you weren't expecting?
So California Adventure.
I think you got to go to that park because everything is more new there. At Disneyland, it's like we love.
It's all nostalgia-based, I think, for us. Yeah. It's rides you remembered as kids. But I remember when Soarin' came out at California Adventure, that's now Soarin' Around the World. That ride is like, I felt like the smile did not leave my face the entire time. Yeah. It's like pure happiness. And my kids love it. Like everybody who, at least who I've talked to, has like just this, you go, oh, you got to go on Soarin', because even it's like worth the wait in line. It's long enough ride to where you feel like it's worth the investment of the line wait and all that.
You say you're coming here 2 to 3 times a week?
Yes. Yeah. Slowing down a little bit because I'm pregnant. So.
And there's a lot. Our kids
But when we come back, I want to tell you about my Disney experiences and get your take on that. We're talking to Julie Mooney and Emily Sims, who obviously are about to be arrested for staying too long at the fair at Disneyland. Unbelievable. We talked about rides that you love, right? We talked about the crowds. I want to tell you my story.
Okay.
When Disney World in Florida was celebrating its 25th anniversary, I went down to cover it as a journalist. And that's when Michael Eisner was running Disney. And I knew Michael because I used to report to him when I worked at Paramount. So we had a long history there. And so I'm there covering the story, and somebody from Disney comes up to me, and I wasn't ready for this. And they said, and I said it just like this, you know, if you want, you can go into that house and have a private moment with Mickey. I said, I can have a private moment with Mickey? I have my camera crew there. I said, okay, let's go. So we go in, and there's Mickey doing his like this, right? He's just, leaning left and right. And I've got my camera rolling. My crew is there. I got my microphone. I had no idea the mouse didn't talk. I'm having a very private moment with Mickey because I'm just talking to myself.
Yeah.
So when we finished that very short interview and the camera was off, I went over to the mouse and I said, excuse me, but when you take this outfit off, are you a man or a woman?
Yeah.
And these two huge Samoan bodyguards came up to me and said, sir, Mickey's the man, Minnie's the woman. Please step away from the mouse.
We should try that next time.
And I'm like, are you serious? So then about 10 minutes later, I'm interviewing Eisner.
Yeah.
And I tell him the story. He says, you think that's crazy? He says, I'm Michael Eisner. And we were doing an event in which the event was over, and I was supposed to get into the limo with Mickey. I get in one side, he gets in the other, and we wave and we drive off. So now I'm in the limousine. It's just me and the mouse.
Yeah.
So I lean over and says, hi, Michael Eisner. And the mouse just wouldn't talk. He said, it's Michael Eisner, the chairman of mouse wouldn't even talk to him because the rules are you can't leave character.
Yeah.
Right?
They're good at it.
Have the mice, I'll use the plural, ever talk to you?
No. We've heard noises coming out.
You've heard voices?
Sometimes you'll hear like a slight chuckle that they like forget to stifle or something, like if your kid, you know.
So if you actually crack a really good joke, the mouse might laugh.
That is the key. Yes.
And they make it like when they give your kids like a hug and a kiss, they make like a kissing, they'll go like, give a kiss.
Well, they have to kind of do that.
Yeah. So there's like something there. Walt Disney World, actually, this year, they debuted like a talking Mickey.
But I heard that they're getting rid of it.
Really?
I just heard it today. They had a talking Mickey.
We're breaking news? Are we breaking news?
We're breaking news.
I just heard it today. There's no longer going to be a talking Mickey. They tested it at Disneyland just a couple months ago.
California Adventure.
Yeah.
I was there.
Yeah, California Adventure. And
it was pretty magical, but that's...
It's pretty neat.
Anyway, you heard it here. They're not doing that anymore.
We've now talked in the air for about 10 minutes, and I just heard the first word magical for the first time.
It's because we use it all the time. We need some new vocabulary, right?
Now, you're pregnant.
Yes.
How do you do Disneyland pregnant?
You just take it slow. There's still a lot of rides you can do while you're pregnant. I mean, anything that doesn't have any sudden jerks, jolts, movements like that.
So most of the rides in Fantasyland.
Yeah, we stick to Fantasyland. Pirates, even we go on Jungle Cruise, but I eat a lot. There's a lot to eat there.
Stop right there. Let's talk about the legacy of Disney food. It is now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Legacy of Disney food was it sucked.
Yeah.
Come on, it did.
It was like fair food.
It was
like
bad. Yeah. And are people still walking around with these turkey drumsticks too?
They are.
And you know why? It's because they've. Because of now this new era of Instagram food, they photograph really well. You know what I mean? When you have like a drumstick the size of your face, it makes for a good photo. So there's a lot, that's why I think people like that. Yeah. I don't know if it's they enjoy like eating the entire turkey leg as much as they enjoy taking the photo to say. Now there's merchandise, a shirt that says like a guy
turkey
holding
leg.
A turkey leg at Disneyland. There's merchandise that caters to their popular
everything
food
in this country has become branded. But
yes.
In Disney's defense, the food's gotten better.
It's
so good.
A lot better. Even since we started Magic Kingdom Mamas, the food has really gone up quite a few notches.
And they've catered to food, like to quote foodies now. So there's, there's something for everybody, really. And they cater to people with food allergies. And, you know, if you're vegetarian or vegan, there's a lot of things that they just, there's a lot more options than what you used to have.
Now, I know, because you guys are like completely off the deep end when it comes to attendance numbers. Do you have any idea how many times you've gone?
We don't.
We figured it out. There's one, I think it was last year. I don't know.
I mean,
we had looked at our
three times a week for,
I don't know,
however many weeks. There is a way you can look at your annual pass record and see how many.
I'm assuming. Stupid me. I'm assuming you have an annual pass.
We do.
Yes, and it was hundreds of times. Like, I mean, it's in the hundreds.
Yeah. So can I be the guy at the turnstile who looks at you and go, "Really? You're back? Really?"
There are people, especially Emily. There are people who recognize Emily because she is such an early, like the parking attendant.
It's called the midnight shift security. Right.
Yeah. So they, you know, they see her coming and they kind of give. It's like a very familiar wave.
Yeah.
There was times we convinced that some of the characters that came out in the morning knew Emily and Ray. Just like they just, I don't know. I think they recognize her because she's the first person running through the gate. Pregnant with a child or not.
That's okay.
Now, let's turn to a serious subject, one that I'm actually pursuing as a story right now.
Sorry.
We're doing a story right now on something called miracle flights. I'll explain what that means. It's the abuse of the privilege of having a wheelchair at the airport. How many people who say, "I need a wheelchair," because they already know the scam, that they can check in early, they get to the gate early, and somebody pushes them on the plane early. And the reason why we call these miracle flights is because when the plane lands, it's a miracle. They can run. Okay? Disney's had that problem.
Yes.
And we've seen it. Yep.
And they've actually cracked on it. So when I was in high school in the early or late 90s, early 2000s, I remember.
You were in high school in the 2000s?
Yeah. Well, 2003, I graduated.
I'm checking into a home.
But there were, I remember kids, you know, using, in high school, everybody has all these injuries and knee from sports. And I remember kids borrowing each other's like knee braces. "I'm going to go to Disneyland," because you could get in, you could skip the line, or they would roll you up the back way to the ride that you wanted to go to. And now.
So everybody's claiming an injury.
Yeah. So I think they've gotten better. And also.
Have you ever done it?
No,
never.
Okay, fine.
We're not rule breakers, though. I think I would be the one to get caught. So I just.
But you considered it.
Yeah. No, never. I never did in high school. But I know that I'm sure it happens every day. But we do know that they've gotten more, they've gotten stricter. Like City Hall has gotten stricter on giving out passes, like disability passes, that there's just more of a vetting process now that exists than what existed before.
Because people were abusing the system.
Sure. Yeah. Even, you know, yeah. For sure.
I mean, does that really get you to the front of the line?
They've changed the system a little bit where it gets you through a line a lot faster. So you kind of get a return time. It's sort of like a fast pass, but it works a little quicker than a fast pass.
And for
people
with family members with disabilities, it's amazing. It's good for kids with sensory issues.
For people who have a legitimate need, why not? Right.
Yeah, it's wonderful, but it is a bummer to see. Yeah, people abuse it. We haven't seen it that much, but also we haven't been, you know, scouting it out, like being like, "Oh, that person got off there."
Yeah, we don't know who is
let's face it. Yeah. It's not necessary to use the scam if you arrive at the park at 4:30 in the morning.
Yeah, exactly.
Just thought I'd mention that.
True.
Audible.com has more than 150,000 titles and virtually every genre. So check it out for yourself. Sign up today at www.audiblepodcast.com/travel today to get a free audiobook and 30-day trial.
Riding along in my automobile, my baby beside me at the wheel, cruising and playing the radio with no particular place to go.
I've been in California since I'm 21 years old, which meant I had to have a car, which meant I had to drive. And, you know, I've been stuck in traffic since I'm 21.
Excellent.
Excellent. Thanks a lot. My next guest knows a little bit about that because she's the executive director of the Anaheim Transportation Network, Diana Kotler. Diana, is it getting better?
I think it is. I have to be hopeful that what we're doing here in Anaheim will not only benefit our city, but will actually be
a role model.
A role model for other destinations, of course.
I mean, people don't realize, you know, we talk about, you know, there's the HOV lane, and we talk about, you know, things like, you know, the Elon Musk's tube and high-speed rail, which we may not ever see in our lifetime, but the fastest growing form of transportation in America. I always surprise people with it. They never get it. It's bus.
Well, I think because it's most flexible. You can change the route. You can change where you're going. You can determine that.
You can move your assets.
Even though rail moves more people because it's just bigger capacity, but the bus is more flexible when it comes to the form of public transportation.
The last figure I saw was something like 3,200 individual routes in this country that people don't realize are served by bus.
And as I mentioned, because it's flexible, because you can adjust, you can change your hours of operation, and you can decide where you stop almost on the spot. In Anaheim here, specifically for the resort, out of those 3,000 plus routes, we run 23.
And but that's 23 compared to what a couple of years ago? It's grown.
It has quadrupled since we started in 2003. We started with 8 routes, and now we're operating 23 and moving it close to 10 million people per year.
And how far do these buses take you?
Well, we are in Anaheim. We do things the Anaheim way, and our service.
What does that mean?
It's the Anaheim way. We do things to make sure that our destination continues to move. And I literally mean that. As I mentioned, we transport 10 million people. Imagine if you had 10 million cars on the streets, on the road, just around here, Disneyland and Anaheim Stadium, the Honda Center, and Center City. So our purpose in life is to make sure that you never have to use a car, that you use those routes, you use our buses, and you get around in the most convenient and cost-effective manner.
What's your biggest challenge then? Because not every bus is going to go on the freeway.
That is correct. Our buses do not go on the freeway. Our biggest challenge is actually not having enough buses. And at certain dates and times and points of a day, we just don't have enough. The people actually are kind of like going to Disneyland. You have to get used to waiting in line in order to get on the bus and then get to the park.
But if I'm coming to Anaheim and I want to take a bus, where do I get on the bus?
At all hotels in Anaheim, all 72 properties that are located in the city of Anaheim, Anaheim Resort, a part of our system, they actually bought in and created that
system. And do you have hop-on, hop-off?
It is a hop-on, hop-off. For $5 a day, you can hop and off all day long, anywhere you want to go. So.
And for $10 a day, you just move in?
Exactly.
Okay, just double-checking.
Why not?
Of course.
Of course.
But the bottom line is that's taking X number of cars off the road. And it's allowing you to, you know, do other things.
Well, it also provides the establishments, whether it's Disney or the hotel, to use their land more properly. So they don't have to build as much parking. They don't have to create areas where people have to leave their cars behind. They can actually use the land in a more productive manner. They can build more rooms. They can expand their convention centers and so forth, just because people don't have to park. They can hop on the bus and go.
And, of course, in certain cities, you have gallery nights on Thursday nights, and you have other events that you can do, and that provides that for them as well.
Absolutely. Angel season is about to open. We'll be serving the Angel Stadium. Currently, we're serving the Honda Center. Precisely, it's a hop-on, hop-off. So the entire city of Anaheim is able to use our service, whether you're a resident, employee, you're here for a visit, a family, doesn't really matter. Our purpose in life is to make sure that you never have to drive a car.
And as long as I don't have to drive a bus, I'll be okay.
I don't drive a bus either.
We're talking to Diana Kotler, the executive director of the Anaheim Transportation Network. Never. Diana, thank you for coming by.
Thank you. Thank you for having
us. So you can get there from here?
Yes, we can.
Okay.
And you will. And
whether I like it or
not.
Exactly.
Diana,
thanks a lot.
Hello and welcome to Alaska Flight 438. We'd like to tell you now about some important safety features of this aircraft. The most important safety feature we have aboard this plane is the flight attendants. Please look at one now.
My next guest writes for the Orange County Register. Still happy to see we have newspapers in this country. And I encourage you to... I get so angry at my own staff. I say, are you reading a daily newspaper? Anybody who doesn't read a newspaper in my staff becomes a news item as they depart from the staff. Because you learn so much, and my next guest knows all about that because she writes for the Orange County Register, as I said. Marla Jo Fisher, how are you?
Hi, thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, so how long have you lived in Anaheim?
I've been in Anaheim for about 25 years.
And how long have you been writing for the paper?
I've been writing for the paper for about 25 years.
So they haven't found out yet?
No.
But the thing is this, you write some funny stuff. I mean, it's about lifestyle and living in Orange County, but also a little bit of Disneyland, too.
Well, right now I'm covering Disneyland full-time as my full-time job. So basically, I write a column once a week about being a mom, being a single mom. But then the rest of the time, I'm spending, you know, 8 hours a day at Disneyland just writing about Disneyland.
Now, you adopted two kids, right?
Yes, correct. Out of the foster care system, yeah.
Well, how long ago was that?
That was about 15 years ago. So are they young adults now?
Are the kids still going to Disneyland?
They loved. My daughter has an annual pass at Disneyland. You know why? Because she's in Orange County, and that's what kids do in Orange County, right? Is they have annual passes to Disneyland, like about a million other people.
Oh my God! Do you have an annual pass?
I do. Well, my company buys me an annual pass when my kids were
because you have to cover the breaking news
because it's an important job, you know. Well, you can laugh, but actually,
I'm not laughing. It is a big news item.
You know, Disneyland.
It's a different zip code. Come on.
Yeah, you know, Disneyland is the largest employer in Orange County.
Yeah,
and in fact, one of the largest employers in the entire region. So, you know, so there's a news beat, and then also there's fun stuff to write about.
All right. So how do you have fun at Disneyland?
How do I? Well, you know, here's my problem. I get motion sick. So I'm like the most hilarious person ever to be a Disneyland reporter. But I like
there to. There goes Marla Jo throwing up again on magic.
Do you know what the fun thing to me about Disneyland is? There's so many weird people there. People love Disneyland. There's so many people that are such devoted Disney fans that there's literally a guy who goes every single day. He's gone every single day for 6 years.
And you've done a story on him before.
We've done stories on him in the past. There's people who will camp outside stores for hours and hours to get one particular pair of Minnie Mouse ears. And I just find these people to be endlessly hilarious.
Have you met my senior producer?
No.
On the radio show?
No, I have not.
Yeah, you just say the word Disney and she's sort of like smiles in the most demonic, demented way. It's a sickness, I think.
Well, you know, Disney is arguably the most sophisticated entertainment company in the world.
Because they figured it out.
Right, yeah. And they
know out the science of it.
The science of it, and they're brilliant both at the marketing of what they do, and they're brilliant at how to make people have fun, and, you know, and it's paid off big time for them.
Okay, so you know how many people are coming to Disneyland? Just the pass holders alone is, what, a million or something?
Yeah.
Right?
Approximately, yeah.
That's crazy. So they've got hotels on the property.
Right.
Right? That didn't used to be the case.
Right.
You had, I mean, this hotel was a Disneyland hotel, but it wasn't a Disney hotel. But what's changed dramatically for you, let's say, at Disneyland in the last, let's say, 3 or 4 years?
Well, it's getting ever more crowded. You've actually had...
They have to manage people.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. I don't know when the last time you went to Disneyland was, but it's absolutely phenomenal. The crowds are phenomenal. Right now is supposed to be the off season, and still, you know, you couldn't swing a cat in there without hitting somebody.
Is that a ride, by the way, the swing the cat ride?
I think you've got something there right now.
I'm going to be
writing soon about the Disneyland cast, but that's a totally opposite. That's a totally different subject.
Now, have you ever, since you're such a Disneyland fanatic yourself, have you ever been one of the characters?
I have never been. You know, I have not been a character. And you know, they have a rule now that people can't come in character costumes, so they can't pretend to be characters. Because people were doing that.
They were showing up as Mickey.
Exactly. They were going in character costumes and signing autographs and stuff.
I hate. How could you sign an autograph with that big white mitt?
Mickey only
has three fingers. What are you talking about?
Maybe Mickey doesn't sign autographs, but that was my kids' favorite thing when they were little, was having their autograph books and getting their autographs, you know, of all the characters.
All right, so it's getting more crowded.
Phenomenally crowded.
Do you think there will come a time when Disneyland is open 24 hours a day?
You know, it is open, believe it or not, it is open 24 hours a day on very rare occasions for special occasions, you know, and they get tremendous crowds because it's such an unusual happening. I have wondered myself, and I've never talked to them about it, why don't they just have extended hours? Why don't they just open, you know, it's from 6 o'clock in the morning until 3 o'clock in the morning or something like that. They have to close sometime because they have to clean it.
They have maintenance.
Right, exactly.
You know, if Pirates of the Caribbean isn't working, I'm not going.
And, you know, there's a lot of maintenance on those rides. I mean, tremendous amount of maintenance all the time, yeah.
And safety, too.
Exactly, right.
But you would think as the numbers grow, sometimes exponentially, they're going to be confronted with a challenge of keeping the park open longer.
You know,
And then you reach the point of diminishing returns.
Exactly. You know, I mean, first and foremost, they're a business, and they want to make money, and they're making money hand over fist right now. I mean, they have...
They've been making money hand over fist since 1955.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, they mint money.
They mint money, yeah. I mean, they have a 20% annual, you know, profit.
They were the first ones to realize that at the end of the ride, you can't just leave the ride. You have to go through the merchandising of the ride.
That, and you know, and whenever I go someplace now that doesn't do that, I'm like, wow, they really need to step this up. They need to, you know, have the gift shop at the end of whatever you're walking out of, right?
You mean you're encouraging that?
Well, it's, you know.
Uh-huh.
It's a thing.
It's a thing. So how much Disney memorabilia do you own?
You know, I gave away a lot of my swag, and the reason is that many years ago, I covered Disneyland. I covered Disneyland from the time they started planning for the new theme park and building Downtown Disney. And they send reporters and media tremendous amounts of swag. I don't know if you ever get any swag, but it's just phenomenal.
No, all the swag I get from Disney goes to my producer. You should know that by now.
Well, they send you phenomenal amounts of swag, and the swag is actually quite valuable, because even if it's a crappy little tote bag, it's a limited edition special media crappy little tote bag, and you could actually turn around and sell that thing and make a ton of money off
it. So how's your eBay life coming?
So what I actually did was turn it over to the Anaheim History Room, which has a collection of all that stuff. And so now that I'm covering Disneyland again, I started collecting more swag, and so now I got to find a nice nonprofit to donate it all to.
There's the spirit. Yeah. But I mean, they're just not just a theme park, they're a manufacturer.
Yes, they are. And you know, there's stuff, a lot of their stuff comes from China, so you know. But the thing is that they really know how to control their media and their presence, you know, and that's one of the reasons why they're so incredibly successful. They have these media events where they bring in the media, they bring in bloggers, they bring in mommy bloggers, and they are very, very good at getting people to say nice things about them. It's funny how you bring in people all day long and give them, you know, free tickets and free food, and it's funny how they like that, and they tend to write nice things about you.
Really?
Yeah, it's phenomenal how that happens.
Have you been eating well at Disney?
You know, I can't say. One thing I'll tell you that has changed in Disneyland over the years since I last covered it is the food has gotten a lot better.
I've talked about it earlier in the show. The food used to suck.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's gotten better.
It's gotten a lot better. There's some sophisticated restaurants now.
In fact, at Disney World, I've had dinner at the Contemporary Resort there, up on the top. It's excellent. You know, and I wasn't expecting it. I was expecting, you know, bad Jell-O and, you know, the turkey drumstick.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Catch us each week as we broadcast from a new location somewhere around the world.